Welcome to the Dildorks, dorky discourse on sex, dating, and masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and I had phone sex earlier today. That is foreshadowing for the topic of our show. Who are you, friend?
I am Bex. I am a sex educator and a sex blogger, and I am very tired because I was up very late doing in-person kink things. So, yeah.
A rarity.
Yes.
So last week we were talking about long-distance relationships, and we really didn't get into the sex and kink stuff, and that's really, like, more of our wheelhouse, as you might have intuited from the nature of our show.
Yeah.
So I guess I want to start with, like, a really broad question, and I guess we'll get into, like, the particulars of this, but how do you have sex in a long-distance relationship?
You mean aside from airplanes?
Sure, yeah. I've never had sex on an airplane. Have you?
Oh, no, not on. I was just saying, like, facilitated by.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I was gonna say, like, I'm actually next week about to take my first plane ride with my partner in almost 2 years of dating because, like, you know, usually one of us is flying to see the other one, so there's no reason why we would generally need to fly together. And the thought did cross my mind of, like, this is a rare opportunity. Should we fuck on the plane? And I actually think plane sex sounds far too stressful to me.
Yeah. Using those bathrooms is stressful, like, on your own, honestly. And yeah, I think the only thing I'd do on a plane is, like, if it was, like, a weirdly empty plane and it was doing, like, a red eye and I could get away with, like, a hand job in a seat in the back or something, you know, under a blanket, whatever. Like, yeah. I could fuck with that, like, mostly because I always think about doing shit like that when I take the bus up to Toronto to see you and shit.
Yeah.
Because it's just, the bus is so dark and everyone is asleep and it's so quiet and there's just such opportunity there.
Yeah. When I first started texting with my partner, they told me, I was on a plane one time and they told me to go jerk off in the airplane bathroom. And they did not know, because they had not fucked me at this point, that I take longer to get off than would really be practical for that type of situation. And I'm such a good girl. I was like, I don't want to disrupt people's days. I don't want to keep people waiting outside this bathroom. Like, can I just wait until I get to the airport and go jerk off in the airport bathroom? Because that seems more respectful. There's, like, a million stalls, you know. So yeah, they quite reasonably were like, yeah, sure. So that's the extent of my sexual experience on planes, is I almost jerked off once.
You thought about it, considered.
Yeah. So what are some types of long-distance sex that you enjoy? Many of which I'm sure we've talked about before.
Yeah, I mean, my go-tos are either sexting or, like, video stuff over Skype I've done. But I think most frequently is either sexting or sending videos rather than, like, video chatting. Adjacent but different, kind of the in-between.
Yeah, I think it's been really interesting to me to hear from a lot of different people in a lot of different long-distance relationships about how they have sex, because I think it really depends on, like, your personality and your sexual style. Like, there are some people who are very, very anxious about the phone or about Skype and prefer to do sort of, like, pre-recorded media or typed conversations. And there are other people who find sexting boring. Like, they just can't get on board unless there's some kind of, like, real-time or vocal aspect to it. And I think, like, obviously it's ideal if you and your partner match up in this regard, but if not, like, it's nice to compromise and have sex in the way that your partner prefers sometimes and do it the way you prefer other times.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, what do you actually, maybe this is too personal. Did I just say that on the Dildorks? What do you do when you have Skype sex? Because Jerk I would off. Imagine, yeah, I would imagine it's sort of a mutual, like a masturbation situation. But like, how do you turn that into something that feels connective and slightly closer to in-person sex?
So for me, most of the times I've done it was in a power dynamic where I was the submissive partner. And also mm-hmm. I was the person more comfortable getting naked and getting off on camera. So mm-hmm. in my own life, that manifested a lot as just Skype dates and chats and whatever. And then, being bossed around and told what to do. And mm-hmm. It kind of heightens the power dynamic and makes it a little bit more immediate. Mm-hmm. and really plays into my exhibitionistic stuff in a way mm-hmm. that, like, I could totally take pictures of me doing what I was texted, told to do.
Right.
But there's something more immediate and tangible, I guess, about doing it in the moment. And just practically, it's a lot easier than trying mm-hmm. to take a selfie while you come, which I've gotten better yes. at. I'm out of practice, I don't know. But was a skill that requires learning.
Yeah.
And being able to set the camera up, like, on a thing across the room and just go eliminates mm-hmm. that struggle.
Yeah, I've definitely found, I mean, I feel like at this point I've had like phone sex and Skype sex and whatever in like all their various iterations, basically. And I found mm-hmm. that if I'm going to be like doing stuff for a while, I will want to set it up on my computer so that the webcam is capturing stuff mm-hmm. rather than FaceTime on my phone where I have to physically hold my phone. But yeah, I think like basically there's like, it seems like there's two modes of long distance telecommunication sex. Like either you are directly commenting on what's happening, like maybe telling someone to jerk off or describing how you're jerking off or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or you're kind of more like role playing that you are physically together and you're like, here's what I would do if I was there, or like, now I'm gonna do this. And it's like you're sharing in this like shared imagination space. Mm-hmm. And I hear from a lot of people that they feel silly sometimes when they have phone sex or Skype sex, and this is kind of their big barrier, is it feels like awkward or silly. And I kind of wonder if switching from one of those modes to the other one might help. Like maybe if one of them feels awkward to you, switch to the other one, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
But what else do you think might help if people feel silly or awkward about like talking about sex or performing sexually for their long distance partner?
I think practicing alone and mm-hmm. getting more comfortable with sexual language as a whole and the ways yeah. people can talk about sex. Because I think another thing that brings in that level of awkwardness is that they don't really have a vocabulary to pull from or a ton of models. Maybe they've seen like some dirty talk in porn, but like, let's be honest, porn mm-hmm. is by default usually pretty campy. Like, wait, no one talks in yeah. porn the way they do in reality. And while dirty talk may be closer, it's not always. Mm-hmm. And we feel silly replicating a lot of things in porn. But I would say going yeah. to erotica and fan fiction and other, like, sexy media, even hiring mm-hmm. a phone sex operator or what is that mm. sexting platform? Like, there are platforms where you can sext with sex workers.
Sext Panther.
Yes, that's the one. Mm-hmm. And to just get acquainted with what sexual dialogue sounds like and what things you can say and what feels good to you, and practice saying things out loud. Read things out loud to yourself. Sit alone in a car and tell yourself a dirty story on your way to work or whatever, you know? Just get acquainted with that kind of language so that it doesn't feel like the only time you're saying these things are in weird, scary, high pressure situations when you're with someone hot and you're both naked.
Yeah. I think like a lot of times when people are nervous about dirty talk, either they don't know what to say, in which case like the most basic formula is like, say what you want to do, say what you're doing, say what you have done previously. Like, really, you don't have to get fancy. You can literally just describe things that are happening or have happened or that you would like to happen. But I think a lot of other people like feel silly saying the words because they think that they're going to sound silly and that the other person is going to think that they sound silly. And in my experience, that almost never happens because the person is so distracted by like their arousal at what you're saying typically that they're not thinking about like, oh, this person never talks like this and this is weird and they sound ridiculous. Like, I just don't think that that's like really a thing that's happened to me. So it's one of those anxiety situations where like you definitely overthink it way more than the other person does.
And, like, so here's the thing about sex. Arousal is somewhat of an altered state. And when you're not turned on, everything we do during sex looks really weird. Like,
yeah, totally.
It's all weird and awkward. Like, if I heard my own dirty talk back after sex, sometimes I'm like, oh, I said that? Well, that was a, I guess that came out of my face. All right. but in the moment, it was really hot for everyone involved.
Yeah.
So I think having a little bit of compassion for yourself, and thinking about, like, things you say with dirty talk, take them with the same level of seriousness as maybe things you'd say while you're a little bit tipsy, where you're like, oh, I guess, okay. Like, wow, that sounded a little silly, you know, byproduct of all the arousal. You know, like, don't, it's not, you're not performing, like, a legal argument. Like, you're not expected to be eloquent. Like, we recognize that you're in the middle of fucking. It's okay to sound a little silly sometimes.
Right. And on the topic of tipsiness, since you mentioned it, I mean, I'm not going to encourage people to do substances who don't like to do them, but I've certainly found that alcohol or drugs can loosen my tongue a little bit. So, I mean, there's all those consent complications as far as substances go, but if you're in a long distance like relationship where like you know each other pretty well, you know each other's boundaries and limits pretty well, I do find I am much more inclined to talk dirty when I am like slightly fucked up on something, even if it's just like one drink. It just sort of makes me forget my inhibitions a little bit, and maybe once you've done that a few times, it's easier to do that even without the substance.
Right. You could even practice. Like, you've talked about reading with your partner over the phone. You can even practice reading erotica together so that you're saying those words with your partner.
Yeah, that's a great idea.
This is not the first time that, you know, suck my cock has floated in the air between the two of you, you know? But the first time you say it, well, it's not your words. It's the books. The book is saying all of these filthy things, and it just happens to be coming out of my mouth. And then maybe the next few times those things come up, the words won't sound as foreign.
Yeah. My partner does this really interesting and smart thing, like, because reading to each other, or in particular them reading to me, is like part of our dynamic sexually and non-sexually. Sometimes we'll have like a short list of things that we want them to read me on a particular like phone date, and it'll be like a funny article we saw online somewhere and like a blog post of mine that's coming out soon. But so I noticed that they will typically order it so that the sexiest thing is at the end, because that's like the most likely thing to lead into phone sex, and that can become in itself a type of foreplay. Because so if you haven't listened to the episode of the Dildricks where my partner guested, it's called Sir E.S. Business, and you should have a scroll back and look for it. But one of the things we talked about on that episode was like the importance of foreplay for phone sex, which like isn't really talked about very much. But I mean, it is weird to just jump in and start being like, and then I'm gonna fuck you like this. Like, it's like kind of a strange transition. So like, in the same way as sex in person has some kind of on-ramp, some kind of like lead up, it is helpful to have, you know, some flirting or some, even if you describe how you kiss them, how you touch them before you start having sex with them. These things, you know, kind of help transition you into a more sexual headspace.
Yeah, and even for me, like, just flirting and that kind of creating that kind of banter and having some sort of semi-sexual through line to the conversation that is gradually building up, the same way you might flirt during a date before you're going to take someone home or whatever. I think if you recognize phone sex as having the similar, if not the same arc as sex that happens when you're in the same place, it's a little bit easier, but people aren't great at transferable skills when it comes to sex. They don't really recognize things outside of their own context.
Yeah, it's true. And like, I kind of think that as time goes on, there will be more and more discourse about sexting and phone sex and Skype sex as like actual sex, which we've discussed before on a number of occasions, like the extent to which we view those things as sex or not. But I mean, I think if you showed a dildo to a person in like the 17th century and were like, if someone gets fucked with this, are they having sex? They probably would say no, right? And there are still people today who would say no about that. Yeah. But I think, like, for the most part, we are shifting toward a conception of sex as, like, including these sort of, like, quote, artificial additives or however you want to put it. And I think, like, technology may eventually become one of those where, like, we do consider all of those things to be real sex.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, we talked about Because Internet last week, the book. But I think it's something that has me thinking about a lot is the difference between people who see the internet as a tool for getting things done, getting information, getting their email, whatever, and a tool for social experience and a place where we can have social experiences. Because there are so few people that view the internet as a social space, because it's not a physical space. And I think the line of, you know, how do you view the internet? Is it an environment that we all exist within and are interacting within? And I think people who fall more in that camp are more prone to be like, no, yeah, I'm having sex with these people. I mean, I think that tends to have a pretty big overlap in queer, neurodivergent, you know, disabled communities, because we are the people who really, really benefit from having access to socializing in those kinds of spaces. But yeah.
Yeah, and I think, like, on that note, when I think about the benefits of long-distance relationships, which we also talked about last week, like, one of them for me is that sex has not always been a super accessible thing for me, in part because of my introversion and depression and other, you know, mental and emotional factors that would make it difficult for me to, like, quote, get out there and, like, look for people to fuck or even, like, leave my house to go fuck someone sometimes. And so being able to have sex on the phone with someone who lives 500 miles away is pretty powerful for depression. Like, I can feel desirable. I can be swept up in this, like, imagining this sexual scenario. And I don't have to have showered or shaved my legs or gotten out of bed even. So I definitely consider this, like, a tangible benefit of LDRs is that sex in some ways feels more accessible, even though a lot of people would say that it's far less accessible.
Yeah, and it is accessible in timing ways for me as well, right? Relationships that I may not have the time to maintain in person all of the time I can space out more in-person visits and have more long-distance relationships. And for me, my experience of my sexuality and of kink is extremely psychological, extremely based in fantasy, and, like, with one of my current partners, when we're having sex, even when we're in person in the same place, we're usually dirty talking and building on some combined fantasy and creating some imaginary wherever layer of experience on top of it. So we're able to do that even if we're not together, and I'm able to, like, for me, that's a huge part of the experience. And to be able to access that from anywhere is awesome.
Yes. Yeah. I keep pitching an essay on phone sex and depression to various publications, and they just keep not going for it. And I'm like, you don't get it. You got to get on my level.
You don't understand.
Yeah. But so let's talk about long distance kink. Because this is in some ways easier and in other ways harder. So how do you do kink long distance? What are some of your favorite ways of doing that?
Primarily, I do a lot of stuff with DS, protocol, ritual, and service. I find playing with power dynamics is relatively easy to do over long distance, and it is the most accessible of my core kinks, because I would say, you know, service and power exchange and masochism are some of, like, my core, the lens through which I enjoy all other kinks kind of comes down to those three. And two out of three of them are accessible over distance. I really struggle with masochism over distance and experiencing pain because I'm not a person who is great at doing that for myself. It just doesn't create the catharsis. I can't access subspace through experiencing my own pain. It's just, it's different. So that is what I usually have to wait for in person or play with other people. But I really love protocol because it allows the person to feel present in my day to day and creating, like, daily rituals that help me feel kind of connected to them wherever they are. And even if we're both having busy days, I know there will be these moments that we'll be able to connect on whatever this, you know, ritual that we've created is. And I really, I mean, I always enjoy protocol because I enjoy being able to customize something and, like, truly understand the person that I'm playing with and find something that will benefit both of us in a really specific and personalized way. And protocol allows me to do that. So something I do with a partner that is submissive to me is they're a photographer. And, you know, they were worried about feeling burnt out on doing too much work stuff and not enough fun stuff. So once a day, they send me a picture of something that brings them a lot of joy. Whatever it was that day that made them happy. But it gives them a chance to pick one thing every day and take one fun picture of something happy. And it just and it's particularly fun because kink, and it gives us a moment to connect, which is nice.
Yeah, I agree. Protocol seems to be the easiest way for me to, like, stay feeling connected to a partner in a kink dynamic if they're long distance. I've talked before about probably my favorite one of mine, which is that I keep a digital to-do list, which my partner has access to. And I update it every weekday with my tasks for the day. And sometimes they will, like, tell me what order to do those tasks in. Sometimes they'll say, like, if you get all of these done, you'll have, like, a reward at the end of the day. Lately I've started working on a book, which, by the way, I'm going to announce soon. I can't go into it too much right now, but
she says immediately after announcing it.
So, yeah, I mean, like, I talked to my agent and she was like, maybe don't, like, officially announce it. But I was like, oh, but I have definitely talked about it on the internet. But so my partner has been assigning me, like, which sections to write on which particular days. And if I complete all of the sections assigned within a particular week, then I get a reward at the end of that week. And we check in fairly regularly about, like, which protocols are working, which are not. And it's just a way of, like, feeling more connected. And it creates these sort of, like, checkpoints so that you can't really, like, forget or slack on you know, staying connected to your partner as long as you're following these protocols. So those are nice. You brought up masochism, though. And I think, like, this is such an interesting discussion as far as long distance, because, like, when I do long distance masochism stuff, my partner is telling me how hard to hit myself and with what implement, and they are saying the word now every time they want me to hit myself. So they are, like, very much directing the action, and I've gotten to a point of conditioning with it where it almost doesn't feel like I'm hitting myself. It almost feels like my body's just responding to hearing that word automatically. So I mean, to me, that definitely feels like an SM scene, but I know that there are people like yourself who don't experience it that way. And I think that that's, you know, just worth experimenting with. And there are some kinks that you just really can't do at a distance, whether in general or just, like, because of how you in particular like to do those things. And, like, that's fine. But if there's ones that you can do at a distance, like, great. They're fun.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. For me, the issue is my hand will literally falter. Like, I just cannot hit myself as hard as I want, as I can take pain.
Yeah.
Because I'm a big old softy that doesn't hit things.
Like, would you have any interest in... Would you have any interest in topping in that way, though? Like, does that appeal to you at all? Or does that kind of take away what you like about topping?
Yeah, no, I think I could definitely top in that way. And I think I think that could be really satisfying. Because what I really enjoy about topping is creating a mental and emotional experience for someone. So if someone can experience pain in that way, then great. I don't really care about being the person to specifically cause the, you know, like, physically do the action, as long as I cause the action. You know what I mean? Like, it's still my will. I don't really care how it happens.
Right. Like, I've talked to a number of tops about this, and it seems like it really depends on what you get out of topping, because there are some people who really, really need to see, you know, the facial expressions, the body movements, all of that stuff. And then there are people like my partner who enjoy hearing the reactions, like the sounds, and then kind of just the knowledge that they're, like, inflicting pain on me. And my partner also likes to see bruises, which in a long distance dynamic is, like, not that hard. I can text a picture of my bruises easily. If we're on video, I can easily show them any marks that I might have. So, I mean, you gotta kind of, like, drill down and figure out, like, what elements of these kinks actually do you need in order to feel fulfilled by them, and are those accessible via long distance in some way?
Yeah. I think the thing for me about masochism is, so I'm the person who, I love things like pain play and horror movies and roller coasters right up until the second before I have to do them, in which case I'm like, this is terrible. I hate this. Why would I ever do this? Oh my God. and I need someone to kick me off that ledge. And I like to be kicked off that ledge, and I love to do these things, and I know that fact about myself, but I cannot be that person. And, like, I know that about myself, and I've walked into situations with people and been like, hey, yo, I need you to tell me I can do this and tell me to do it. And they'll be like, yeah, you'll be fine. Come on. And I'll be like, great. And, like, they're like, I don't know what the fuck you're talking about, but you'll be great. And I'll be like, sure, great. Like, that's literally all I need. But I need that little bit of that external push, and I just can't get it on my own to bottom for masochism. And I think that's what it is.
Yeah, that's understandable. Yeah. And like one of the questions we got was about long distance sex toys, and most of them that I know of are like Bluetooth controllable vibrators. But it makes me wonder about like alternatives for kinky people, because like, will we ever, for example, have like a neon wand that someone could remotely control, or a machine that would hit you with a paddle that someone could remotely control? Like, these would be really interesting. I think that they would be really easily abused and could really easily make mistakes, but it's definitely interesting to think about.
Yeah, well, my concern is what happens when it breaks. Like, I feel like there are so many more ways that kink can go wrong, and what happens when that technology fails is a lot scarier than what happens when the Bluetooth technology fails and ruins my orgasm, you know? I think that way because so many Bluetooth sex toys suck.
Yeah.
I'm always struggling with them. I think I've gotten the best connection out of WeVibe.
Yeah, I was going to say the WeVibe Sync is my favorite one, and even that one disconnects fairly frequently. So, I mean, honestly, my recommendation would be that you just have a Vibe or another type of toy that you and your partner are both very familiar with, so that one or both of you can like give direct instructions, like turn it up to the third, you know, speed out of 10 or whatever.
Yeah.
I think that honestly works better than most of these Bluetooth controllable toys that are really finicky. But if you have to get one, the WeVibe Sync would be my recommendation.
Yeah. And I think by extension, WeVibe's other Bluetooth toys. Like if you're looking at other shapes, the Nova and the Rave are both really solid shapes and presumably use the same Bluetooth. I've only ever tested it on the one. But the Rave is the more G-spotty one. The Nova is the only rabbit vibe I like.
It's so good. Yeah, it's very fucking good.
Yeah, it's real cool.
I want to just revisit safety for a moment. Some of the things that me and my partner have in place as far as safety, because we do like impact play over the phone and sometimes other forms of sadomasochism, which of course could potentially be dangerous because I am literally alone in my room. They have my roommate's phone number. So if they needed to get in touch with me and I wasn't available because I was harmed in some way, like they could call or text my roommate and be like, hey, can you go check on Kate, whatever. And they also have the phone number in their phone of the closest hospital to me, which like we've never had to use either of these measures. It's never even approached being a problem, but I think it makes us both feel better to have both of those measures in place.
Yeah, then you don't have to like fall back on Facebook stalking and Googling in an emergency.
Right. Yeah. We got a listener question, which is very important to address, which is how do you deal with sub drop, top drop, aftercare, that kind of thing when you're sexting or having phone sex or having Skype sex? And I think like this is such an interesting question because a lot of people don't think about this as something that you need to do because, again, we don't think of these types of sex as real sex. But they are often very physically and psychologically demanding, just like real kinky sex can be. Or even real vanilla sex, honestly. And so, I feel like you still need aftercare. But, like, how do you like to do that?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think step one is recognizing that you do still need aftercare, which is not something everyone realizes, as you were saying. So, for me, something that I like about... For me, like, we've talked about how, for me, aftercare is usually being able to sit quiet for a little while. And just be, like, with the person and maybe watch something on TV or whatever, so I don't feel like there's pressure for me. It's very easy for me to fall into a trap where I feel like there's pressure for me to entertain someone. And it's easier for me to not fall into that trap if we're watching something on TV or whatever. So when I'm all, like, floaty and still quiet, sometimes it's nice to have something silly to watch on TV, to be present with each other, to come out of that space. That's harder to do if you're playing with, like, a long-distance thing. I can do that very easily if we're sexting, which is nice. Then it's just like, all right, don't just like wait for the person to come and go to bed. Because I've definitely done that, but it's nice to be able to like check in for a second after and like, hey, that was great, whatever, you know, a little bit of talk. Or also checking in with them the next day. But just getting to the closest approximation of what your aftercare would look like if you were together. Maybe having things that only come out as a part of your aftercare. Maybe have, you know, a blanket or a hoodie that, you know, smells like them that you can wear, you know, pull out for your aftercare. Or, you know, snacks that you really love. If you can create something that is, you know, novel and connective in that experience so that you don't necessarily feel alone for it, that might be helpful for folks who really depend on, like, that cuddly connectivity. But I mean, your experience is going to be as personal as your aftercare experience in person is.
Yeah, totally. Some things that my partner does that I think are nice, when we have in-person visits, they will almost always, maybe even always would be fair to say, bring me some kind of snack or treat or candy of some kind, which usually lasts me until after they've left. Having one of those after phone sex is really, really nice because there's this sense of like, oh, like this person brought this to me. It's almost like they were here and they brought it to me right now, which is really lovely. I do have like pieces of clothing that are my partner's that I can like hug or cuddle or whatever or wear. But usually for us, aftercare, after phone sex is just like talking, or in many cases, just like being on the phone and sitting in silence, because sometimes you have that state after sex where you just feel dead. Like you just can't really talk and you're just kind of like lying there in a puddle. And so we just like do that together. And it's nice in a way to like listen to someone else kind of like catching their breath and figuring out how to speak again and stuff. Like it gives me similar feelings to like doing that in person. We'll also talk about like how good the sex we just had was or like what we're excited to do the next time we see each other. Sometimes if we're like really missing each other, we will leave our phones on speakerphone all night, plugged in next to our bed so that it feels somewhat like we're sleeping together. Like if I wake up in the middle of the night, I can hear my partner breathing, or snoring or whatever. And that's like comforting to me. I think like as long as your preferred methods of aftercare aren't extremely physically based, there's probably a way for you to get what you need through a long distance dynamic. A listener question that I thought was interesting was, do you have different protocols when you're in person versus while you're apart from each other?
I generally do. Just more out of excitement than necessity. But when you're together, there are a whole bunch of things that are available to you that you can't do when you're apart. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there's a whole breadth of opportunity and, you know, being together is like a special weekend or vacation or whatever. So it's nice to add a couple of things on there and like tweak stuff and use that opportunity to do some of the things you couldn't normally do and other things that are built for distance, built to feel connective when they're not near you. Maybe don't always make sense. Like my partner doesn't always send me a picture of something that brought them joy if we've spent the whole day together because we experienced a lot of very similar joy.
Yeah. I don't usually do my to-do list when me and my partner are physically together because they know what I'm doing and may in fact be watching me doing it. We have some in-person protocols, like if we go out to a restaurant or bar together, they get the first taste of my drink or my food before I do, which of course I can't do when they're away from me. Although, like, I am so trained on it that at this point when I order a cocktail, I do momentarily have the thought, like, oh, I have to let Matt take a sip of this before I can. And then I'm like, oh, they're not here, though. So it's just, like, really, it's really drilled into me. But yeah, like I think like there are a few of our protocols that apply whether we're apart or together. Like one of the ones is I have to ask if I'm allowed to come before I reach orgasm, which we do during phone sex and also during in-person sex. I think it's nice to have like at least a couple maybe that are for both, because then it gives you some sense of consistency and of like, this is the same relationship as it is when we're apart. This is the same person.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, I find using, you know, we use similar honorifics or the same honorifics, you know, and the things that do make sense do stay in place.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I think you play with it and find what works.
Yeah. Okay, a few more listener questions. Y'all had some great questions. I just want to express my appreciation for y'all's great questions all the time. I post them to my Twitter and Instagram followers, so check me out on there if you want to contribute. But one of the questions that we got was interesting was, how do you shop for toys or lingerie or that kind of thing for a long-distance partner? Because, you know, if I'm with a in-person partner or a local partner, like typically I will just take them or I will just go with them, which just isn't always possible with a long distance partner, especially if you don't get to see each other very often. So do you have any experience with this or any tips on this?
Yeah, I mean, so the internet's great, obviously. And there are tons of internet-based like sex shops and lingerie stores and etc. So it's pretty easy to start your shopping at the very least on your favorite online shop and, you know, get on Skype together or whatever. You know, if you're wanting to buy something together, it's very easy to browse shops together, send each other screenshots or links back and forth, you know, whatever that looks like, and whittle down kind of a list of things you're excited about. And then you can go to a shop and maybe try things on and take selfies and send them over for, you know, and you can make a date to have them available to, like, give you feedback on these things you try on in the way you kind of talked about going to dates. We've had people do that when I worked in sex toy retail. The issue with that is they will try and come into the store on FaceTime and we don't allow any recording in the store. Because there are other people, and you can't really walk around filming your whole experience in our sex shop. Yeah. Like, we need to look out for everyone else. But you can, you know, take a picture of just the product if you need to send it over, or, you know, text them information, you know, text them feedback about it, but I think it would make sense to have kind of a date-like experience of browsing online and come up with a list of features you're looking for or things you're excited about. Come up with a wish list. Come up with questions you have about the products. And then whoever is going to the brick-and-mortar place can kind of be sent on a research mission. Extra fun if you're doing DS stuff and you can literally send them on an errand. With a list of information to come back with. And then either they buy it there or maybe they come back with pictures of them in this lingerie that you picked out for them to try. Or, you know, information about exactly how squishy that soft Vicks skin toy really is in person. And then you could make the decision together and, but don't make the decision together and then order it online if you've, like, gone in and had, like, an hour worth of help from your local sex shop. Buy it from your local sex shop.
Yeah, buy local. Buy
don't
local
be that guy.
Sure, yeah.
But, yeah, I think kind of fragmenting and stretching out the process a little bit can help to make everyone feel like they're a part of it.
Yes. I've done this in so many ways. I've had my partner ask me to research a particular type of toy and write them up a little brief about like some of the options available and the pros and cons of each. I've gone into sex shops and taken photos of things and texted them to my partner and had them make a decision for me. One of the first really nice things my partner did for me when we first started like texting was they bought me a Doxy 3 off my wish list for Christmas, which was really sweet. So you can have like collaborative like Pinterest boards or wish lists on Amazon or wherever else where you like record what you are considering getting, whether individually or as a couple. I also think in general, like for any relationship, it's great to have a convo early on about what all of your sizes are and have each of you write those down. That's great to have. I actually hilariously, within the first, you know, few weeks of dating my partner, we had this conversation and I gave them my ring size, which I honestly, retrospect, I don't know what I was thinking, but they were like, okay, so I have your like bra size, I have your dress size, pant size, whatever. And I was like, oh, also my ring size is 6. And in retrospect, that's a completely nuts thing to say to somebody. but so now they have that information. So there's that. Also there is like, I think if you ever have the opportunity when you're physically together to go to a sex shop together, even if you don't buy anything, it is a very fun and informative thing to do because you can pay attention to what your partner gravitates towards. You can physically try vibrators, which you should always do if possible, because you just never know really how like rumbly or buzzy something is until you try it in person. My partner also sometimes will read aloud to me reviews of toys that we're considering buying, which in itself is like an interesting, you know, purchasing decision thing, because we'll discuss after they finish reading to me, like, does that sound like something that would work for us? Like, let's talk about what we would do with it, what the possibilities would be. So that's in some ways a substitute for, you know, trying to pick something out in person. And of course, like there's this incredibly sexy thing you can do for lingerie where you go into a store, try on some lingerie, text them a photo of it, and get their, you know, yes or no. And if you have some kind of like DS FinDom stuff going on, they could even like PayPal you some cash to buy the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot of, you know, ways that you can play with this dynamic that are really fun in order to like get the objects that you want.
Yeah, I actually just realized recently that my partner had not been to any of my favorite local sex shops. So yesterday we went to two leather shops that I love down in the village. And yeah, but one of the things I really love was that the way you talked about, doing research for your partner, and that's something I've been doing a lot, because service can be kind of hard to do over distance, especially for folks who think of service particularly as like butler maid type service, which is a lot of cleaning and hosting and serving and that sort of thing, whereas I fall back on a lot of I have this problem and I don't care how it gets fixed. I just want it fixed. So research a solution.
Right.
Figure out, you know, because there are definitely things where I'm like, I want this done right. I don't care enough to find out what doing it right looks like. So you go figure it out and then we'll make sure to execute it right. Or I do this a lot with clothing. Like, I like to dress in a way that looks good, particularly now post-surgery. I'm having a surge of vanity that I'm really enjoying. But I'm wanting to wear clothes that I feel good in, and I don't enjoy shopping. Like, I enjoy being well-dressed. I do not enjoy the process of finding and buying clothes. It's just arduous and tedious for me. So I have my partner, I will say, listen, I need new shirts, or I need something to wear to this event, or like I need a new pair of glasses or whatever. And they will send me a list of or we did a watch recently, and I'll be like, these are the qualifications. I need to be able to see it in low light so I'm in dungeons. I want it to be analog, relatively simple. And they will come back to me with a list and be like, okay, buy from these 10 items. rather than having to browse the infinite corners of the internet and being really overwhelmed, they will narrow down that process for me. And it's something that they're able to do for me from anywhere. But it's really valuable and really, really solves a problem that I have, and feels like scratches that service-y itch for both of us.
Yeah. My partner assigns me like a monthly writing assignment, and they'll pick what it is based on something that they're currently wanting. So, you know, like when they had recently come out as non-binary, they asked me to recommend 5 items of clothing or makeup that would be a little more androgynous or feminine, and like write a little bit about like why I think each one would be appropriate for this person in particular. They've also had me write about like scenes that I want to do with them coming up. Write erotica specifically tailored to their tastes. When I moved to a new neighborhood, they had me research 10 different locations in my new neighborhood that I would enjoy going to, because they knew that that was the thing that I would struggle with, is like because of anxiety, like finding new places to go. So they wanted to like improve my life by having me do that. So these like writing assignments, if one or both of you is like into that idea, are a really great avenue to like find information and like an exchange service in the way that you're describing. Like they've been so helpful to me on so many different areas of my relationship.
Mm-hmm. And I've also done more like journaly writing assignments for them as well.
Mm-hmm.
And something I got for them recently was a leather bound book in like their favorite color with roses, which they love. And this is like one place for their writing assignments in particular to live. So again, it's like this talisman of our relationship. Mm-hmm. That they're able to sit with if they're doing a project for me, even if I'm not there, so that I can still have somewhat of a presence in the experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that makes me think about colors, which also I think are very good in long-distance DS dynamics. I mean, they're good in any DS dynamic with people who enjoy colors, but... I'm wearing my collar right now. It's just a way that I can feel like my partner is physically present with me, even when they can't be, because it almost feels like their hand around my throat or something. And they'll have me wear it, you know, when I'm having to do a difficult thing or when I have a lot of work to do or whatever. They'll give me the command to wear it. I'm not allowed to remove it until I receive verbal confirmation that it's okay for me to remove it. So... Mm-hmm. That is a lovely way to feel connected, especially if you spend the time to pick out a collar together that like really suits both of your needs and both of your aesthetic preferences.
Yeah.
A couple more things. Somebody asked about makeup tips for FaceTime, which I think is hilarious and very astute, because actually like FaceTime and Skype and all of these technologies do tend to kind of wash you out and make your face look different from how it actually looks. So briefly, like my makeup tips for FaceTime would just be like, do the makeup that you normally do that makes you feel sexy and hot, but do it a little bit more intensely. So maybe like do your eyeliner a little thicker, do your eyebrows a little bolder, maybe put on some lipstick. It's just like a camera thing. It'll pick up on your face better and you might feel cuter. But also like on that note, like I used to kind of feel like I had to look hot on FaceTime or Skype all the time. And the reality of being in a relationship is like you're not going to look hot all the time. And also you don't have to. Like your partner, if they're decent, does not require that of you. They love you even, you know, makeupless and sweatpants or whatever. So for me, like I've had to basically train myself to not look at my own face on the screen when I'm doing FaceTime, because I get too distracted by how much I don't like what I see, and it takes away from my ability to focus on my partner's beautiful face. And they're, you know, thinking I look great. Like they're just happy to see my face because they don't see me very often. And so if you even need to like physically put a post-it note or something over your own face, if that helps you, like do it, you know?
We are such different people, because I get on Skype and I, like, I'm like fucking Narcissus. I'm like, look at my gender over there. Look at me. Look at what I did.
when I do dress up for a phone date or a Skype date or whatever, and like I put on a dress and I do my makeup and stuff, it does help with my ability to feel sexy. So it's not like every time I do FaceTime, I'm covering up my own face. Like sometimes there are times when it directly contributes to my feeling that like this is a sexy mm-hmm. thing that I'm doing right now. And so yeah, I mean, it's very interesting how these technologies like play into our ability to feel good or bad in our relationships, and you just got to kind of like harness them to do the work that you want them to do.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe one more question. This is relevant. We had a listener actually email us this week to specifically ask us if we had any tips for frequent flyers in general, like any like air travel tips. We've talked about our TSA tips, which I like, especially in regard to sex toys or kink toys, which I think basically amount to like, tell them very upfront, like that's a sex toy, that's for sex. I know that it's embarrassing, but in my experience, which at this point is pretty extensive, it does seem to be the best approach, because if you act shifty, they're going to wonder, is this a weapon? Is this a bomb? Whatever, like a little bit.
They're more embarrassed than you are. Like, mm-hmm. more often than not, the most negative a response I get from them is, oh, sorry, oh, okay. And then they put it away and let me leave. Or they're like, oh, have a great trip. Yeah. Oh, you go. Great. Like, and I'm like, all right, cool. Bye. I don't know. Like, they're like, yeah. Ooh, you've got like a bag full of sex toys. I'm like, yeah, I'm having a better weekend than you. I don't know what you want me to tell you. I store them in clear bags separate from other things, so that I can mm-hmm. say, you know, oh, are you noticing the thing on the bottom left of the bag? You know, you can open it up, but it's sex toys. And sometimes I will, like, look around and be like, you might want to open that up in a more discreet area if I'm, like, standing next to a family full of children or whatever. Be like, just so you know, I think the thing you see is a sex toy. You may want to open that up somewhere more discreet. You know, some people I've talked about... I've heard talk about asking them to change their gloves before they open it and rifle through your sex stuff with gloves that have rifled through everyone's stuff. But I keep it in a plastic bag so that hopefully they can see everything without touching it.
Yeah, that's good. I'd also say just a linguistic thing. For whatever reason, the vanillas seem to know what BDSM is more than they know what kink is.
Interesting. So,
yeah, I don't quite know. I don't really know what this is. There are some people who still use the phrase S&M to describe, you know, kink in general. Yes, but in my experience, like, I will typically say it's a sex toy. And if they are giving me a weird look because it is a kink thing that is not immediately recognizable to a vanilla person as a sex toy, like if it's, you know, rope or a bat or an e-stim hookup or whatever, I'll say
if they're giving you the how does this... If they're giving you the how does this go in your vagina look?
Right. Like, you can say it's a sex toy, it's for kinky sex. Yeah. They usually, in my experience, will not ask for more details. But if they do, I would say, like, this is a moment to, like, confidently and concisely state what it is. Like, there are a lot of times when strangers ask me about my sex life when I am hesitant to get into it, but TSA, like, you could actually really derail your fucking day if you don't just, like, be forthcoming with them, so I would recommend that. And of course, like, we're both talking as white people, and I'm sure that, like, from what I hear from my friends of color, like, this is a definitely more of a problem for people of color, getting pulled aside and getting singled out in TSA and, like, other institutions like that. So I can't directly speak to, like, what would be helpful in that case, but I do think, like, being straightforward as far as, like, it's a sex toy is probably the best route if possible.
And if you're gender nonconforming, any gender expression gear can flag you in systems and make you more likely to get kind of pulled aside and get searched. So I don't wear my Packers and will almost always get patted down when I had to wear a binder. Presumably because it makes the density in my chest look wonky and the, like, screener thing. I don't know. But I've had, like, TSA agents just fully walk up to me and, like, pat down my whole chest. And I'm like, hello, nice to meet you. Glad we're just doing this. Fantastic.
Yeah.
So that's definitely also a thing that can be tough. And, you know, if your gender marker doesn't necessarily match your IDs, or the way you present doesn't necessarily match the gender markers on your ID or whatever, that can also be really hard. I don't have a ton of advice for it other than be prepared that traveling might suck.
Yeah. One other thing is, if you wear a collar or, you know, some kind of chain or whatever that's, like, representative of a collar, I would strongly recommend having a chat with your partner before you go through TSA about your policies and protocols around that, because I know a lot of submissives feel really shitty if they have to take off their collar when they haven't been given permission to do so. And it can be really, you know, disheartening and saddening. So my partner and I have, like, this sort of vaguely worded protocol that if I need to remove it without permission in order to protect myself or the caller, I can do that. And that extends to going through TSA. I almost always take it off, put it in my bag, go through the scanner, just because there are metal bits on it. I don't want to get singled out. I have too much anxiety for that. And then I just immediately put it back on as soon as I'm through TSA. And, like, even just having that protocol makes me feel so much better about having to do that, because if I had to, you know, go against my Dom's specific orders in order to do that, that would be, like, another barrier for me to fight through psychologically. And traveling is already hard enough. So, yeah. But in general, traveling tips, I mean, I've traveled a lot in the past 2 years as a result of this LDR, and my main tip, especially if you get anxious about travel, is just to have routines and rituals that feel comforting to you. You know, have, like, a suitcase and a carry-on bag that you know what they're like, you know how they operate. Have a packing list, make it the same way every time. Some people like to have a spreadsheet, which they can reuse. I just usually make a packing list, like, physically in a notebook, and I refer to the previous one to make sure I don't miss anything. If traveling is stressful for you, like, maybe also exercise a kink as a way of dealing with that stress. Like, my partner knows at the end of a traveling day, when I finally arrive where they are, I am kind of depleted and I kind of need, you know, to be daddy-dommed a little bit harder than I normally would be and that kind of thing. So, yeah, just, like, find whatever makes it feel at all more comfortable or safe for you and try to do that if possible. Those are my frequent flyer tips.
Yeah, I think even just recognizing that traveling is an ordeal, because not everyone does, and people will often, I think, travel and expect to start their trip right away and be like, okay, I am here. The vacation or visit or whatever needs to start immediately, and any time I am not actively and excitedly visiting this person is, like, lost time. And recognizing that, well, traveling's exhausting, and maybe planning in some time to recoup that first night or whatever can make that easier.
Yeah. I've definitely struggled with, like, the extent to which I am psychologically depleted by travel is so extreme that I sometimes feel like I'm kind of being a dick when I finally get to where I'm going. Because it's like when you get so introvert overwhelmed or whatever, like, I just really sometimes can't function properly. And I'm just kind of being a dick to people. And so my partner is very aware of this and will often, like, try to make sure that it's whatever we do when I get there is very low pressure. Like, we'll probably go out for food and then go back home and go to bed. So if you're in an LDR, like, you do have to sort of become acquainted with your own rhythms as far as travel and distance go. And whether you're apart or together at any point, like, I think, like, keeping a journal or keeping some kind of record of how you tend to feel is helpful, because then you can refer back and be like, oh, the world isn't ending because my flight was delayed 3 hours. This is always how I feel. when that happens, and I'll be okay. I've gotten through it before. I can get through it again.
Yeah.
I think that's it for us right now. I have been wondering for a while whether we should do an episode specifically on phone sex, in which case I would love to get an actual like phone sex operator on the show, and I know one who's great. If that's something that you would like, please let us know, and please let us know like what kinds of questions you would like us to ask, because I think phone sex is fascinating, especially now in an age when it's sort of out of vogue. But yes, this has been really fun. I've been Kate Sloan. My sex blog is at girlyjuice.net. The rest of my writing is at katewritesaboutsex.com. I'm on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice, which is also where I ask listeners for questions for episode-specific topics every week. So if you want to get in on that and submit questions for episodes, that's the way to do it. And my other podcast is called Question Box. It is the game show podcast of shockingly personal questions with my friend Brent Black, who is a delight. And you can search Question Box on any podcast app and you should be able to find it. Where is your stuff, friend?
I'm Bex. You can find all my writing at Bex Talk Sex, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at Bex Talk Sex. Together we're the Dildorks. We're on Twitter and Instagram at the Dildorks and at thedildorks.com. You can also find us by searching the Dildorks in your favorite podcast app. While you're there, rate and review us. It brings us up in the charts. It makes us easier for other folks to find. You can also go to patreon.com/thedildorks to throw a couple of bucks our way and help us keep doing what we're doing.
Thank you so much to Protodome. He did our theme song. Thank you to Amy. She did our logo. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life. Bye.
Bye.